The Oldest Sin by Ellen Hart. Poem. In Eden lived a serpent foul, for when he heard Eve's stomach growl, he said by way of greeting, I've cookies, beer, and pretzels too, deep-fried cheese and chicken stew. I've cake and candy just for you. The serpent coiled around her side and said, although he knew he lied, an apple isn't cheating. The serpent looked Eve in the eye and said, a teeny piece of pie? Remember, life is fleeting. Eve passed the apples and the chips. She held a donut to her lips. She never thought about her hips. Though some say greed or lust or pride, the hungry know deep down inside, the oldest sin is eating. Chapter 1. Hildegard O'Malley gazed across her desk at the elderly man who had been shown into her office just a few minutes before. Even though he looked vaguely familiar, perhaps someone she'd seen on TV, someone she was supposed to like, his rather abrupt, almost imperial manner instantly put her off. He had snow-white hair and a pleasant, even kindly face, but 32 years spent in hotel management had taught her not to trust first impressions. Hildegard prided herself on her sixth sense about people. It was a must in her line of work. And the bottom line was, this man wasn't what he appeared to be. For one thing, he hadn't mentioned money. Most people who came to the Maxfield Plaza in downtown St. Paul to discuss holding a convention on the premises always talked money up front. After all, if you couldn't afford the price, there was no point in wasting each other's time. So, if I understand you correctly, she continued, leaning forward and touching the tips of her fingers together, you'd like to see our conference facilities. One of your larger meeting rooms. His voice was deep and formal. A briefcase and a narrow-brimmed man's fedora rested on the chair next to him. I represent God's church, the Church of the Firstborn. He said the words proudly, as if she should know the organization, and to be honest, it did ring a faint bell somewhere in the back of her mind. That brings me to my next question, Mr. Purtis. Hal Purtis. Yes, Mr. Purtis. The Maxfield Plaza is a rather expensive hotel in which to hold a week-long meeting. Will your membership be staying here? Some will. Most won't. I don't have all the particulars. Besides, money is no object. He said the words dismissively. So that was it, thought Hildegard. He was wealthy. Or his church was. She glanced at his leather briefcase. It did look expensive. So did his dark suit, immaculate white shirt, and striped silk tie. Our area membership is only about 200 people. And may I assume, then, that you're a minister? I am an apostle. She had no particular problem with ministers, but apostles were a new one. Her uncle had been the pastor of the Lutheran church in the small southern Minnesota town where she'd grown up. Even though she was in her early 60s now, she still remembered how much she adored him. Religious nuts, on the other hand, were another matter. She wasn't quite sure where Mr. Purtis fit on the spiritual continuum. Adjusting her sweater, she said, "Let me show you the Lindbergh room. It's just across the lobby in the north wing. I believe it will handle your needs quite nicely." Silently, Hildegard led the way down a wide corridor and through a red marble Art Deco lobby. The Maxfield Plaza had an unabashedly theatrical quality to it. Sleek lines were mixed together with jazzy zigzag ornamentation. The bold geometric sunbursts and lightning bolts had always been a bit much for the more conservative locals, though everyone seemed to enjoy a periodic foray into its glamorous interior. Streamlined club chairs and couches were scattered in small conversational clusters throughout the lobby. The Maxfield was an exclusive four-star hotel on the National Register of Historic Places. Kings and queens had stayed within its walls. Passing Scotty's, the Maxfield's first-floor bar and a favorite haunt of the downtown St. Paul theater crowd, Hildegard made a sharp turn and then headed into another hallway, which led to a spacious banquet room near the rear of the building. She removed a set of keys from her sweater pocket and unlocked the door. Howell Purtis stepped inside, adjusted his rimless spectacles, and gave the room a thorough once-over. His eyes came to rest on the deco chandelier high above his head. "This will do," he pronounced, looking pleased. I'll want to order a buffet lunch for our noon meals. We follow the Levitical laws of clean and unclean meats. I'll notify our food beverage manager. He can help you with the particulars. Splendid. Even though his movements were slowed by age, Pertus walked around the room with the ease of a man used to giving orders. After setting his briefcase and hat down on the front stage, he turned around to face her. I will need a podium. The larger the better. That's no problem. Now that you've seen the space, why don't we go back to my office and I can get the paperwork started for you. I'll need to know the date. This weekend. Oh dear, she said, shaking her head. That will be a problem. She began paging through the scheduling book. That's rather short notice. I'm afraid I'm not usually the one who sets these events up, but I'm pretty sure we're booked. There's a large convention in town this weekend. The meetings are being held over at the Civic Center, but most of our rooms will be taken since we're so close. It's the Daughters of the Sisyphus Society. Have you ever heard of that group? She was attempting to be pleasant, though she could see he had little interest in anything but his own agenda. No, he said, his tone both annoyed and abrupt, and you can stop pawing through your notes. Our meeting has already been scheduled by my assistant, Isaac Knox. Oh, I see, she said, looking up. Well, that does change matters. I assume you've been apprised of the cost. Cost? We're not paying. Then can you tell me who we should bill? His eyes flashed at her. Didn't you hear me say that I represented God's church on earth? God doesn't have to pay. You're giving this to me free of charge. She stared at him, dumbfounded. In all her years at the Maxfield, this was a new one. Of course, as the general manager, she'd been asked to donate space to various organizations and causes over the years, but to simply walk in and demand a charity? Well, this was a new one. I have been given a commission, Miss O'Malley. Go ye therefore into all the world, preach the gospel unto every one. My job as God's anointed is to be a witness to the sinful society out there. I am to preach his word. Your job is to help me. His face had grown flushed. You are part of a cult, she murmured, more to herself than to him. So her instincts had been right. You didn't hear me. Oh, but I think I did. She backed toward the exit. I'm sorry, Mr. Pertus, but this hotel does not give its services away free of charge. An inner sense told her that the longer they talked, the more upset he would become. He already looked angry enough to eat glass. The smart thing to do was to get back out to the lobby. At least there, she wouldn't be alone with his temper tantrum. You're refusing me, he said, his voice a mixture of astonishment and frustration. I'm afraid so. Thinking one more comment was in order, she added, I'm going to have to ask you to leave. He held her eyes. Whosoever shall not receive you, nor hear your words, when ye depart out of that house, shake off the dust of your feet. Verily I say unto you, it shall be more tolerable for the land of Sodom and Gomorrah in the day of the judgment than for that house. He picked up his briefcase and hat and walked slowly toward her. I'm sorry you feel that way, Mr. Pertus. She was put off by his pomposity, and yet she felt rooted to the floor by the intensity of his eyes. You think the day of judgment is a long way off, don't you, Miss O'Malley? Well, you're wrong. The day of judgment is right now. It's all around us. This hotel will not be spared. You may not believe me, but from this day forward, the Maxfield Plaza is cursed. This was ridiculous, thought Hildegard. The man was clearly unbalanced. Even so, his words carried a frightening impact. She knew it was his intent to frighten, and much to her dismay, his fear tactic was working. She was about to answer his threat with one of her own when he charged past her out the door.